I'm David Gordon. I'm a researcher with the Transnational Threats Program at CSIS. And joining me today are Andrew Cutchins, the director of the Russia Eurasia Program, as well as Tom Sanderson, the deputy director of the Transnational Threats Project. The two of them just returned from a trip to Russia and Uzbekistan, and they're going to speak with me a little bit about who they spoke with, what they learned, and their impressions from their travels. So welcome, guys, and why don't you start it off by telling me who you spoke to and what you learned.
Well, Dave, we went over there to do some research about the Northern Distribution Network, which is what the military, U.S. military's term for the opening of a new transit corridor for lethal and non-lethal goods into Afghanistan that goes through Russia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, down into Afghanistan. There is another potential offshoot of the northern route that goes in through the Caspian through Central Asia. And again, the principal reason for this is that we are increasing the presence of our military by 2.5-3 times. We do have some issues on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border about getting things through, and we need alternative routes. So that's what brings us to the NDN. Now, one of the the highlights of the recent summit meeting between President Medvedev and Obama in Moscow last month was the agreement of the on the Russians' part to allow for overflights of lethal goods over the territory of the Russian Federation. Now, this builds on several other components of cooperation that we've been engaged with in the Russians that some are well-known and some are not so well-known. It really began with, after 9/11, Russian commercial air carriers who have a fleet of the biggest cargo carriers in the world, these Antonov 124s, who have been bringing in goods into Afghanistan to support the troops, principally from places in the Middle East, but sort of all over the world. And one of the things we learned from our ambassador in Moscow, John Byerly, in speaking about this, is that this is one of the areas that of cooperation between the United States and Russia, which even after the Georgia War almost a year ago, when relations hit an all-time low, that part of cooperation did not fall off the agenda. In fact, it was quite important for the United States to still have those Russian planes bringing in those goods because we are really strained to the we're very very much strained to the capacity of get what we can bring in there. Later on in the year, the Russians have agreed to the transport of non-lethal goods through by rail. Starts in Riga, goes through Russia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan into Uzbekistan onto the Afghan border. This is a big step forward. So all three of these aspects, put Russian cooperation on Afghanistan into the highlight or into the spotlight. Now, we met with a couple of officials from the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a number of different non-governmental officials, and essentially what the message was, especially from the officials in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, was that when you look at the set of issues where the United States and Russia can engage in deeper cooperation and where our interests are most aligned, it really is in Afghanistan. And the Russians were quite enthusiastic about the capacity they have and the interest they have in seeing us be successful in Afghanistan in trying to help us do so in a number of different phases of cooperation, virtually everything up to boots on the ground. Tom?
Andy, one of the most interesting visits and interviews we had was with a man named Anatoly Safonov at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Mr. Safonov was a former Soviet Special Forces officer, the Spetsnaz, who then went into the intelligence services in the counterterrorism division, then eventually made it into his current position, which is the Special Representative for Counterterrorism. And he spoke quite a bit about previous U.S.-Russian cooperation, including very interesting anecdotes on cooperation over Afghanistan, namely informing the United States that there was a beacon they had placed in an al-Qaeda training camp in Afghanistan, in addition to providing very good intelligence on Tora Bora while we were there pursuing Osama bin Laden, as well as providing information and contacts through their alliances post-Soviet occupation in Afghanistan. Another interesting anecdote that Mr. Safanov brought up, and this goes to the heart of the notion that U.S. and Russia can cooperate on an issue such as Afghanistan, was the incident in the early 1990s in Dushanbe, the capital of Tajikistan, which at the time was going through a terrible civil war. U.S. diplomats were pinned down and were ordered to evacuate the country and could not make it safely to the airport. So Russian forces from the 201st Motorized Rifle Division escorted U.S. diplomats and I believe Canadians and Germans as well to the airport and suffered one dead on their return to their base in an ambush. And that incident's commemorated every year in Tajikistan with the U.S. Embassy. And that really is an interesting story to consider, especially what's going on today. But as we moved south into Uzbekistan, we heard different stories about Russia's commitment to stabilizing Afghanistan. And I will mention who it is we met with, and then, Andy, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the Uzbek perspectives on Russia's interest in Central Asia, in particular the military presence, the CSTO, and Russia's interest on stabilizing or not stabilizing Afghanistan. So when we reached Tashkent, we had a number of very high-level meetings, including the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Nurov, the Minister of Defense, Berdyev, the Secretary of the National Security Council, Mr. Atayev, and then the Minister of Foreign Economic Relations, Ganiev. In addition to that, we met with a number of institutes, one that's under the office of the President Karimov, and then one that's apparently non-governmental. We heard some interesting feedback, in particular, very harsh views on Russia's intentions. So, Andy, why don't you cover that?
Yeah, those meetings, Tom, were really quite extraordinary, weren't they? I mean, the first thing that struck me was simply, again, the level of the meetings which we had. You know, these were not short meetings. We met for 90 minutes with the Minister of Foreign Affairs. We met for more than 90 minutes with the head of the National Security Council, our embassy in Tashkent advised us is an extremely powerful man in Uzbekistan. So that was quite remarkable in and of itself, and I think speaks to the fact that the Uzbeks are very, very genuinely interested, not only in seeing us successful in Afghanistan and working with us there, but they're also very keen on a broader and stronger U.S.-Uzbek relationship, which we did cooperate tremendously after 9/11, but then the relationship suffered with differences over the Andijan riots in the spring of 2005 and some internal policies and human rights violations by the Uzbek government. Now, the contrast in the Uzbek perspective, as you suggested, Tom, on Russia and what we were hearing from the Russians about their interest in Afghanistan, again, was very striking. I mean, to put it very starkly, the Uzbeks were speaking quite frankly, in that they believe that Russia sees its interest in continuing destabilization of Afghanistan, to some extent in continuing narco trafficking, drug flows coming out of Afghanistan. And from the Uzbeks, their perspective is that for the Russians, this gives them a justification for maintaining and even increasing the Russian military presence in Central Asia, which has been growing in recent years to some extent under the auspices of the Collective Security Treaty Organization, which is sort of the follow-up of the Warsaw Pact, if you will, a military agreement amongst post-Soviet countries. Now, the Uzbeks are very nervous because the Russians have troops, as you mentioned, the 201st Division in Tajikistan. They also have a base in Kyrgyzstan, in Kant, near Bishkek, and near our base in Manas. And they want to establish a new base at Osh in the Fergana Valley, which would be part of the Collective Security Treaty Organization. Now, the interesting point here is that Uzbekistan is a member of the Collective Security Treaty Organization and distinctly opposes the establishment of this base because of their concerns about growing Russian military presence in the region, and that the Russians want to sort of use the their military presence and, in general, they sort of continued destabilization as the justification for their continued hegemony control in the region. I mean, it was put quite starkly to us by one of the officials that we met with, that the military and security, it's the only card the Russians have to play. They don't really have effective cards, economic cards, trade cards, assistance cards to play, and this is the one that they want to play. And we had a very interesting discussions on Iran as well, and the Uzbek perspective of Iran's interest in Afghanistan. And here, again, the conclusion was quite striking, that from the Uzbeks, their advice to us, Americans, was in effect that, you know, on Afghanistan, you likely have a more reliable partner in Tehran than Moscow. That's quite a startling perspective.
And it sure was, and I was surprised to hear that. We also heard a number of other interesting issues raised by the Uzbeks, and also commentary on what was happening in their region as well as with Afghanistan. I'd like to point out a few of those. I asked several times of all of our meetings and interviews was, what were the views on the recent increase in militant activity and violent incidents across Central Asia, in particular in Andijan and also in Tajikistan, which shares a huge border with Afghanistan as well as with Uzbekistan. And the Uzbeks are very concerned about what's going on in Tajikistan on two fronts. One, with Tajik President Rahman's apparent efforts to push out those members of the United Tajik opposition, which secured a certain percentage of the seats in the peace treaty in the 1990s and 1997, I believe. A number of those former ministers have been dying, being killed, and one of them recently in Tavil Dara, Minister of Emergency Situations, Zioyev. In addition to that, in the Targa Valley and other areas of Tajikistan, you have a number of militants who were trained in Pakistan, who are small in number but are deeply entrenched in those mountains and have a significant advantage. And in some of the areas where they are now and where they were in 2000, 2001, we're only 60 kilometers actually, so even less from the important Uzbek city of Samarkand on the ancient Silk Road. So they're very concerned in Uzbekistan about this increase in threats in Tajikistan. And what may be happening, of course, is that with the increased offensives by the Pakistani army into the Fatah and the Northwest Frontier provinces and the plus up in U.S. forces in Afghanistan, we're seeing some of the Central Asian fighters return to their roots up in the Fergana Valley. And that's causing great concern with the Uzbeks and others. On the narcotic side, we did hear, as you mentioned, Andy, great concern about the trafficking and from the Uzbek side, and we did meet with the Director of International Cooperation at the Counter-Narcotics Agency, that 14% of the heroin heading out of Afghanistan and 16 or 17% of the opium passes directly through Uzbekistan. And that's of great concern because there's about a 1% addiction rate across Central Asia. That's something that my colleague Dave Gordon and I found out during our two-week visit there last year, which is a rate higher than in Europe. So they're very concerned about these narcotics sticking in their country. We also heard a lot of advice from the Uzbeks as far as our policy in Afghanistan to make sure that socioeconomic programs were there in parallel, if not dominant, to the military presence and policy. And in fact, that links nicely with their interests with a stabilized Afghanistan because they would like greater access to ports in the south directly on the Indian Ocean where they can access Chabahar in the Iranian southeastern portion of the country and then Gwadar, the deep water port in Pakistan. Tremendously important for them. They also were very eager to encourage us, to encourage the U.S. government to increase trade and investment in their country. They wanted to stress that the relationship, which up to this point has been built largely on military cooperation, is about more than military cooperation, that you have to have trade and investment for the long term. But what we did learn while we were there is that there's a very complicated investment environment in Uzbekistan where it is very difficult for private sector companies to convert money or products that are sold in SOM or services that are paid in SOM, converting them to dollars, to rubles, to euros and other currencies. And that makes it difficult for investors. But nonetheless, this is a country that sees itself as a key country in the region, one that wants to assert itself and one that is very willing to partner with the United States.
Yeah, just to wrap up, for me, there were a couple of very poignant moments on the trip. And one of them had to do, one of them concerned when the National Security Council head was laying out, here's what the situation was 10 years ago back in 1999. This is why Uzbekistan sees Afghanistan is so critical for its own stability. In 1999, at Heraton, on the Afghan-Uzbek border, just the other side of where our materials are coming in, that was being held by Taliban forces, right on the border of Uzbekistan in 1999. And that was really brought forward, remember when we met with the researchers and the director of the Institute for Strategic Studies, who have one of the most amazing maps I've ever seen of the region. It's about 8 feet by 7 feet, and he went into considerable detail explaining how, through which mountain passes, Afghan and other fighters are coming in, and narcotics, et cetera. The other poignant moment, again, and you mentioned this, Tom, was in the meeting with Mr. Safonov, the head of counterterrorism at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and he recalled that incident, which he was personally involved in safely escorting the American and other diplomats out of Dushanbe during the Civil War. And he said, at the time, there was a shot, and one of the Russian special forces was taken out and killed. And then he mentioned, and this past year he was in the State Department, and somebody recognized him. And it turned out it was one of the diplomats who had been rescued by the Russian forces, which Safonov was engaged in himself. And he recognized him. And I said, you know, I just want to thank you for what you did in Dushanbe back in 1992.
That was great and very interesting to hear him recount that. And it gives us a lot of encouragement as we move forward. We learned an awful lot in both countries. And we'll take this research and add it into the report that is now being put together over the next 4 to 6 weeks. We have a number of our working group members who are writing individual chapters. And we look forward to publishing this in the fall and then to hopefully moving on to a phase two where we return to the region and we go into depth and looking at, again, the geostrategic implications of the Northern Distribution Network and as well as its ability to bring about or stimulate greater economic development that would include Afghanistan and help to win the peace if, in fact, we get there.
Well, thank you both for your comments. And for more information, please contact Tom Sanderson or Andrew Cutchins, both of whom can be contacted via the CSIS website at www.csis.org.